Well, am I pure evil? Am I the face of terror sitting here in front of you?
Today, federal prosecutors are expected to rest their case against Dylan Roof, 22-year-old accused of a massacre fueled by hate,
violence, and the death of 32-year-old Heather Meyer.
You made your mind up on the 24th? You said in that church that you were going to kill Dr. Tillman?
Yes.
In a firebomb attack on a Minnesota mosque.
Hail Trump! Hail our people! Hail
the
victory!
The last 3 days, when I looked at the window upstairs, I felt a bit of shining silhouette on a hill.
There is perhaps no more suitable example of the modern right-wing terrorist murderer than that of Jim Acheson, whose gruesome story will be the flagship episode of the Right Podcast. In this, the first of two episodes, we will learn about Acheson's early troubles and the resentment that formed in him. We'll step back to view the broader American psyche during Acheson's adult life, including the rise of right-wing media, which both fueled and fed off of resentment, like Acheson's. We'll dive into the details of the sad case, but for now, let's just say Acheson pled guilty to two murders, although he wounded six with gunfire and was prevented from killing more, including children, as was his goal. The case is known as the Knoxville Unitarian Universalist Church shooting.
David has been a good neighbor. If I needed anything, he was there for me. He's never bothered anybody. He's kind of quiet, stayed at himself, didn't have a lot of company, but he has always been there for me. Well, I'm really shocked, but at the same time, knowing now what has happened, he and I did have some pretty extensive discussions.
The shooting was politically motivated and very specific regarding the source of this motivation. Peddlers of right-wing hate, disinformation, and propaganda will argue they are merely practicing free speech. Skilled in rhetorical debate, these media personalities deflect blame and instead go on the offensive themselves. However, Acheson's case is pivotal to this podcast because no cable news show host, Telegram personality, YouTube star, or podcaster for that matter, can deny or deflect the direct cause and effect relationship of right-wing spin and Acheson's murder spree. We know this for certainty because Acheson said it himself in his own manifesto. This sentiment was echoed by those who were at the scene of the murders after Acheson's sentencing.
And with an air of, you know, arrogance and just pure evil. Those are the only words I can use to describe what I saw. If anyone could have helped this man who hated Democrats and was on food stamps to get his life together, it was the man that he brutally murdered at the door.
In the mind, in a troubled and bitter and evil mind, hate speech can lead to violent action. And I think people who are decent citizens need to tell the sponsors who profit from hate speech that we need to cut down on the hate speech that's broadcast.
In fact, Matthew Chamberlain, a convict who spent time in jail with Acheson, said the motivations were purely ideological, and if Acheson ever got out, that he would do it again. It should be noted that the previous clip was posted by the Knoxville News Sentinel on YouTube. It's still there for you to see yourself. There are only three comments in the comment section for the video. One of them states he, Acheson, was a hero. While Acheson may be in prison for life, the propaganda that motivated and targeted his violence still persists. Acheson is a manifestation of the daily calls to action, threats, and fear-mongering by those on the right. Acheson took these words from the airwaves, internet, and books seriously, and responded with action that resulted in the deaths, injuries, and psychological damage of many. Let's dive into the twisted story of Jim Acheson, the Knoxville Unitarian Universalist Church killer. Jim Acheson was born June 25, 1950 in Tennessee. Acheson was adopted as a newborn by Jim and Carolyn Acheson. The adoption was apparently arranged by a doctor. Early details about Acheson are sketchy, but we know that he graduated from high school in Harriman, Tennessee, a city of around 6,300 people, about an hour outside of Knoxville. Harriman appears to have a charm about it, with the largest collection of historic Victorian-style houses in the county. There are many parks and rivers for outdoor activities. It's even the home to the largest lake in the South, according to the town's website. This was a setting that Acheson grew up in. A Harriman resident, Orman Chip Dunn, said that he grew up with Acheson and remembered him as a very normal child who was involved in the Boy Scouts. Acheson married shortly after graduating from Harriman High School at the age of 19. According to a relative, Dee Acheson, Jim's first marriage was very short. Dee said that it was a bad marriage and that Acheson left Harriman around the age of 20. After Acheson's first of five failed marriages, he roamed anchorless. It was the early 70s, and America had gone through the civil rights movement and the hippie wave. Vietnam had ended with a disgraced President Nixon stepping down from the presidency in the face of impeachment. Nixon's presidency was one of resentment. Resentment towards Democrats. And for Nixon, specifically, John F. Kennedy. It was only a decade or so earlier that the first televised presidential debate pitted a visibly sweating Nixon against the dashing and charismatic Kennedy, who eventually beat him in the election. In leaving office, Nixon infamously said, "You won't have Nixon to kick around anymore."
Just think how much you're going to be missing. You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
This era was an incubator for such white male resentments at the changing world. Second wave feminism that had started in the 1960s gained traction in the 1970s. Roe v. Wade, the landmark case allowing women the right to choose, occurred in 1973. Barnes v. Tran, often cited as a first sexual harassment case, occurred in 1974. Along with the women's movement came new black empowerment movements and the rise of gay rights activism in cities. Amidst this changing political and legal environment, Acheson wandered through Tennessee and later Florida. In 1974, Acheson joined the U.S. Army. The Vietnam War had ended in failure, causing resentment among troops who felt betrayed when they returned home. But the Cold War was still very real, and American culture was about to become saturated with anti-communist rhetoric, led by President Ronald Reagan and fueled by Hollywood tropes of individualism versus the government.
Calumet, Colorado, population 8,200. Before the sun sets, foreign soldiers will march victorious through the streets.
Get in!
Eight high school students will take to the mountains, fight for freedom, and become a symbol to unite America.
Not bad for a bunch of kids.
Wolverines!
Red Dawn, rated PG-13. Starts Friday, August 10th. Check newspapers for a selected theater near you.
Acheson served as a helicopter repairman for the 101st Airborne Division at Fort Campbell until 1977, and was in the reserves until 1980, leaving the structure of the military behind the year Reagan became president. Adjacent to Atkinson during this time were budding right-wing radio personalities. Rush Limbaugh began his radio career in the early 1970s on the morning commute crew for WIXZ, a small radio station in Pennsylvania. Like Atkinson, Limbaugh faced a series of early failures. Limbaugh bounced from station to station throughout the 1970s in radio and even changed career paths at one point to sports sales. Nearly a decade later, in July 1988, Limbaugh began a new show at WABC-AM in New York City. He debuted just after the Democratic National Convention and weeks before the Republican National Convention. This syndicated show would be the platform that elevated Limbaugh to fame. Another important figure in Atkinson's story was forming his own extremist views during this era. Michael Savage would become one of the most listened to right-wing radio hosts in the nation. Savage, like so many white men of the era, suffered from a feeling of resentment. For Savage, it apparently started with those receiving welfare. Apparently, Savage felt deep resentment over the fact that his then supervisor delivered a check to a family receiving state aid for new furniture. Savage was working as a social worker after graduating from college. And this act made him feel that the people on welfare were being treated better than he was. This resentment, along with the rejection of a manuscript titled Immigrants and Epidemics, seemed to have set Savage on his right-wing trajectory. While radio had existed prior to this time, it was in this period that the modern right-wing media formula was developing. The moral majority, politicizing the Christian right, became a major force in right-wing politics in the late 1970s and early 1980s as well. Along with evangelical Christianity, the Nixon-era resentments and new culture wars were the old racist sentiments seething in America. Lee Atwater, Ronald Reagan's campaign manager, said of his campaign strategies, quote, "You start out in 1954 by saying the N-word, the N-word, the N-word. By 1968, you can't say the N-word. That hurts you, backfires. So you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights, and all that stuff. And you're getting so abstract. Now you're talking about cutting taxes. And all these things you're talking about are totally economic things. And a byproduct of them is blacks get hurt worse than whites. We want to cut this. It's much more abstract than even the busing thing. And a hell of a lot more abstract than the N-word, the N-word." Reagan brought this abstract racism into the White House with fabricated stories about a Chicago welfare queen living high in the hog and strapping young bucks buying T-bone steaks with food stamps. There isn't much information about Jim Atkinson during this period. However, he was apparently married multiple times, each ending in divorce. It also seems that he was never able to advance a career. Atkinson married yet again in 1990 to Lisa Alexander. Mutual friends said that Atkinson was prone to long periods of depression and moodiness. Smallwood, a lifelong acquaintance, said of Atkinson, "He always had the attitude that the government was trying to get him. He disliked blacks, gays, anyone who was a different color or just different from him." Atkinson was a loner, an isolated individual who began drinking heavily. During one night of a particularly heavy drinking, Atkinson lashed out in anger at Lisa. While this is the only documented act of threatening violence, there very well could have been other previous acts of escalation. According to the National Domestic Violence Hotline, escalation can happen either gradually or all of a sudden. It's unknown if there have been gradual or sudden increases in escalation towards Lisa, or Atkinson's previous wives for that matter. But we do know one act crossed the line. Atkinson reportedly put a gun to Lisa's head, threatening to kill her. According to Anderson County court records, Atkinson said he had an option, and that choice included blowing his wife's brains out and then doing the same to himself. Lisa filed for an order of protection against him in March 2000. 2 days later, she filed for divorce. "I'm in fear for my life and what he might do," she stated in the petition. Shortly after, Atkinson was pulled over from his now fifth divorce and charged with a DUI. It would be one of two DUIs charged to Atkinson. In the background of Atkinson's failed marriages, inability to maintain full-time employment, and alcohol abuse was the rise of right-wing media, both on television and a new form of global communication, the internet. AM Radiohead filled a niche for a segment of the population that found a community among callers and the program host. This provided a familiar voice of reason on a daily basis. Personalities like Rush Limbaugh and Steve Savage rose to prominence during the Clinton administration of the 90s. They spun conspiracies ranging from murder for hire plots involving the Clinton family to global conspiracy theories, mixing and combining anti-Semitic tropes of Jewish global domination, satanic one-world government predictions of the New Testament, and Red Scare propaganda from the Cold War. At the heart of these conspiracies was the belief that ordinary white Christian Americans were under attack by Democrats who had radical agendas. It was in this group dynamic that loners and resentful white Christians throughout the United States found like-minded people and a sense of belonging. These weren't blatant hate groups like the KKK, but socially acceptable echo chambers of resentment and conspiracy. The internet cannot be emphasized enough as a driving force for mass communication of radical right-wing beliefs. While the history of the internet can be traced back for decades involving military use and research teams, the rise of commercially available internet access dramatically increased throughout the 1990s. Hate content that would previously have only been accessible at in-person meetings, rallies, or perhaps the mail was now available in every house that had a modem. Chat rooms, message boards, and online communities broadened the reach of far-right messaging. And even before social media, comment sections on certain right-leaning sites provided a siloed echo chamber, similar to right-wing talk radio, but even more responsive and interactive. Smack in the middle of the 90s, a new cable TV station was created. In 1996, Fox News launched with access to 17 million households. The evening opinion shows that mimicked right-wing AM talk show points, such as Limbaugh and Savage, included The O'Reilly Report and Hannity and Combs, featuring Sean Hannity. Let's listen to examples of Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, and Michael Savage's broadcasts to get a feeling for their type of right-wing entertainment.
Because I want to talk about the birds and how the birds are the higher animals and what we see going on in the cities are the lower animals. Do I have to say any more? And I see the animals in the city looting, beating up vendors in Washington Square Park in the name of pride. Did you see what happened in New York under this communist degenerate de Blasio? Have you seen what the liberals have done to New York City?
Many Americans, including this one, believe Barack Obama's emotional attachment to the Muslim world has hurt the USA. Barack Obama's father, who abandoned his family, was a Muslim who eventually turned atheist. Then his mother married another Muslim, moving young Barry to Indonesia, where he was exposed to the Islamic
world. Tonight,
we
have great news. According to my sources, everything that we have been revealing about the deep state for 2 years will very soon result in major serious ramifications. We're going to have a complete breakdown of all of this coming up.
And try to imagine what the world will become unless the lowest forms of humanity are not stopped very, very soon. Have a nice day, because I'm enjoying mine.
But we begin tonight, breaking news out of our Hannity Watch on the deep state. What we're about to show you, this is only the beginning. Buckle up. Thanks to a surprise move by one very brave House Republican, we now have damning evidence surrounding the corrupt, unethical, dishonest actions of so many deep state actors over the past 3 years.
That's not true. I do like white America.
No, I just, you just said this is a one-sided nation. The whites dominate and they're racist and they make you feel bad. Is there a nation that is ruled by black people where you might do better that I don't know about?
You know, don't abandon your children. Don't get pregnant at 14. Don't allow your neighborhoods to deteriorate into free fire zones. That's what the African-American community should have on their team.
Why is this all of a sudden a problem? Why is it that the races were moving together until this communist appeared in the White House? And now all of a sudden, all we hear is about grievance, 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 grievance.
Doesn't that give the socialist, the globalist a problem? Isn't that their Achilles heel?
No, because Obama gutted all of the combat veterans who could have led a movement against an illegitimate government. He started it right after Benghazi.
Police searched Atkinson's house after his shooting spree at the Knoxville Unitarian Universalist Church. Inside Atkinson's house, officers found Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, a book written by radio talk show host Michael Savage. Let Freedom Ring, a book written by talk show host Sean Hannity. And The O'Reilly Factor, a book written by television talk show host Bill O'Reilly. In the next episode, we will deconstruct Atkinson's twisted manifesto, filled with right-wing resentment and hate. We will hear eyewitness accounts of the day of the shooting and the preceding court case. And we will wrap up the sad story with accounts from Universalist churchgoers who commemorate the day of the shooting with messages of tolerance and hope for the future. All of this and more next time on The Right Podcast.